You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports with Jim Daniels on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day. And now, it's Jim Daniels.
Thank you for making us a part of your day. We truly appreciate that. It's NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. From coast to coast, we're bringing you Speaking of Sports this morning. And thank you for being with us once again. And sadly, we have disappointing and shocking news to report. This story is really only a few hours old, so I guess you could say it is still developing and information still coming in, but the main thrust of the story is murder. And it's in the Crescent City. Former New Orleans Saints defensive end Will Smith was shot dead, murdered in the streets of New Orleans last night. His wife was also wounded in the attack. Apparently, this happened in the Lower Garden District of New Orleans. I've mentioned before that I lived in New Orleans for a minute, worked with some terrific people down there, not the least of which is Nancy Janson, who was my producer at the time down there. And I know that her husband works at one of the bigger, more popular restaurants in the Garden District down there, and I know that to be a pretty good part of town. Not at all surprised to find out that that's where, you know, maybe some NFL players are going out to dinner and things like that. I mean, it's typically known as maybe the better part of New Orleans. But following a night out on the town, Will Smith and his wife were driving in their Mercedes G6. That's that square, boxy-looking Mercedes SUV that they have, when they were rear-ended by a Hummer H2. When Smith got out of the car to approach the driver of the Hummer who rear-ended his Mercedes, the driver opened fire. Apparently, Will Smith was reported dead at the scene and his wife taken to a hospital with two gunshot wounds to her leg. Police also say that one of the former teammates of Will Smith, Pierre Thomas, he and his wife had been out with a couple earlier and was on the scene when police got there. Now, this person, this 30-year-old driver of the Hummer H2, was taken into custody, being interviewed, and the handgun used in the alleged shooting has also been recovered. I can't imagine what in the world somebody's going to say to you, what kind of road rage excuse you could possibly use for pulling a gun and shooting someone dead in the street over a car accident, but that apparently is what has happened in New Orleans this morning. So sad, sad news to report for the Saints family. The information and media director for the Saints tweeted out, "A senseless and tragic loss. Our thoughts and prayers are with Will Smith, his wife Raquel, and his children William, Winter, and Lisa." Sad, sad news in the NFL world this morning. Turning to brighter news in the NFL, Los Angeles is going to see a football game for the first time in more than 20 years. The NFL announced earlier this week the 2016 schedule, and on Thursday afternoon, let everybody in L.A. know that on Saturday, August 13th, the Los Angeles Rams will host the Dallas Cowboys in a nationally televised preseason game on the four-letter network. That's not a big surprise. The Dallas Cowboys have been in the Oxnard area doing their training camp for a great number of years out here in Los Angeles. I'm sure Jerry's trying to keep that fan base as big as possible in Southern California. Nonetheless, it's going to be a big deal when they square off in the Coliseum. Yeah, you're going to be watching football games in the Coliseum. Again, last time you saw that, the Raiders were the ones that were draping the Coliseum with all of their colors. So the Rams back in business again at the Coliseum. And speaking of stadiums and that, can I go ahead and add this note here? After 32 years in the Metrodome, the Vikings, and 2 years, I might add, playing at the Gopher Stadium, the Minnesota Vikings are moving into their new home. It's U.S. Bank Stadium, and boy, if you want to see the latest and greatest that the NFL has to offer, just pop online and take a look at Vikings U.S. Bank Stadium. It is quite impressive, and where the Vikings will be playing their games moving forward. Pretty good stuff. Not to be outdone will be the guys in L.A. Believe me, that's the palace in the NFL now, but give it a couple of years, and we'll see what they come up with in Los Angeles. We've seen many, many artist renderings of what they have in mind out here in Los Angeles. Again, this show comes to you from L.A., and so we see a lot of stuff in the local papers, local news, artist renderings. Don't know exactly what they've decided on, but you can bet it'll be spectacular. Also staying in the news of the NFL, you know, a lot of people wondered what Peyton Manning was going to do for a number of weeks after winning the Super Bowl. He finally decided on retirement. So, all right, you're retiring from playing in the NFL. What's next? Well, the first move is to go get some counsel from somebody that's got a pretty good idea on what they're doing after the game. That person that Peyton Manning decided to call on, John Madden. When you look at John Madden and his career, what he has accomplished after football has been tremendous. He was very beloved announcer when he was a part of the team on Monday Night Football with Al Michaels. I can say that I loved him on there. I mean, we all fell in love with boom, whap, pow, and the way that Coach Madden used to describe the game. But he's also been pretty successful in other areas, too. Oh, yeah, that Madden football game. So pretty good guy to get some advice from. And Coach Madden said, you know, maybe the thing for you to do is follow the path of John Elway and try and run a team or get a stake in some ownership if you really want to be invested in the NFL. So many of us believe that Peyton would make the immediate jump straight to the television booth and start doing, if not doing games, doing the anchor desk. I mean, you got, what, like six guys on all of these anchor desks on all of the network programs, and you would think that the network executives would be happy to pop any of those guys in order to put Peyton in there. But you know what? Peyton may be thinking things on a slightly higher level, knowing that you can do TV whenever you want to. And again, John Madden was proof of that because he did that well after any playing or managing days. Staying with the Broncos just briefly, the Broncos have talked a lot, or I should say, let me rephrase that. There has been a lot of talk in Bronco land about, you guessed it, Johnny Manziel. Von Miller stepped up yesterday and said, and I'm quoting here, if I had to make my decision on it, he would already be with the Broncos, talking about Johnny Manziel. Now, of course, this is Von Miller, who is a Texas A&M alum. And, you know, it's doing the right thing. That's saying the right thing. But I think everybody agrees that this guy has got to get his life on track before he's going to get any football on track. And I think, actually, statements like this are probably hurtful. Not that it hurts Johnny's feelings, but it sends the wrong message that he's thinking, see, the MVP of the Super Bowl thinks that I should be on the defending Super Bowl championship squad. I think that's detrimental to what he needs to get over in his head, and that's the fact that he's got to get help and figure out how to get through life on a day-to-day basis before anyone is going to give him a shot at millions of dollars to play football. But yeah, Von Miller saying, yeah, let's get Johnny Manziel in here. I wonder what the rest of Bronco Nation thinks of that. And speaking of the Broncos, this last note on them, a quarterback that they are interested in and they're making some noise about is Tyrod Taylor. The Bills have been doing their research on quarterbacks available in this year's upcoming draft. And maybe they're not completely sold on Tyrod Taylor. Well, the Broncos are interested. And Benjamin Albright of 1340 AM in Denver reported that the Broncos have done more than just inquire about him, that they've even discussed talking about possibly working out a trade. Tyrod Taylor. I think that sounds a little bit better than Johnny Manziel. A quick note, since baseball season has just started, I just want to pass this along to you briefly because we're going to have to move quickly today. We got so much that we want to get to. Rick Horrell, the professor, is with us. He's down at the Masters. We also have Andrew Monaco and some comments from him that we're going to get in there. So we got a lot of stuff that we want to get to this morning. But happy 40th anniversary or birthday to the Bad News Bears. If you remember this movie, it was an absolute scream when it came out years ago. Walter Matthau, beer-swilling Little League coach. Fun stuff. That movie celebrating its 40th anniversary, if you can believe that already. Wow. Okay, I think what we'll do now is take a quickie break and see if we can't get Rick Horrell. The professor, you know, he is always on the run. He's always at the biggest of events all around the sports world in this country, and he's on the grounds of the Masters, so we'll give that a try coming up next, see if we can't get the professor on the line. It's Speaking of Sports on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Thanks for dialing us up, making us a part of your day. We are Speaking of Sports on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. And we're fortunate enough that this time of the program, every week, we have the professor on. Rick Horrell is definitely the sports professor in our world. He joins us this time every week, and not always from an exotic location, but this time from the grounds of the Masters. Welcome, Rick Horrell, to the program. Good morning, sir.
Hey, it's the coldest Masters I've seen in a while, although it'll heat up today, competition-wise, and it'll be benign. The wind will be down. And Jordan Spieth, I think, his last two holes just added about two or three rating points to CBS at the beginning of the tournament. That's what I think.
Well, I think you're exactly right, too. I think he made things incredibly difficult on himself. He could have very easily had a huge lead going into the last day, which changes your game plan entirely. But I think you're right. Many people were going to be watching anyway. Many more will be watching now because we're looking at no less than a half a dozen guys all very close within striking distance. Somebody comes out, puts up a 65 today, and they're going to be in line to win this thing. But the first thing that I want to get to here is you're talking about being cold. It's certainly not cold in the place that you're at, but I read in the Horo Sports Brief this morning that the Masters Housing Bureau said that there's been a 3% increase in the housing this year, and I saw some of the numbers. The average price is $6,400, and it's gone up to $6,600. Is that on the low end or the average end, and is that the house that you're in is one of those?
Low end. So that's not the house I'm in, but I will there's a house that I'm in that is it's pretty expensive, so and I'm not even going to talk about the number because if they're listening to it, it might be a house that I used to be in.
There you go.
So, yeah, right? Exactly. So there are hotels, by the way, and I may not want to mention them either, but there's a particular hotel 1.6 miles from Augusta National that's charging $534 a night compared to the exact same room 30 days later, $55 a night. To the same room.
Oh my.
So the Masters, a lodging tradition like no other.
Now that $6,400, is that for the week or do you get to stay the whole month?
You could probably stay for the rest of your life. It's $6,600 for the week. And, you know, it's not catered. You got everything else is extra. And the bottom line is there's a lot of major events, but certainly at Augusta. The people who have lived here, it is a tradition for them to clear out, get out of the rat race, make a lot of money, you know, go on a family vacation, make sure their house is okay when it comes back, get the security deposit, and go watch the Masters somewhere else and realize they're making a lot of coin.
You know, now, a lot of coin, from a lot of coin to a little bit of coin, despite this being a very exclusive event, they have managed to keep the prices on the food that they serve. Not only is the food consistent year to year, but so are the prices. I mean, you talk about getting a domestic beer at a ball game, it's like $10. It's only $3 at the Masters.
Well, and the famous pimento cheese sandwich, which is their icon, $1.50. The chicken wrap and chicken sandwich, $3. You get at Yankee Stadium, you pay six times that, and you watch your guys lose. And so the bottom line of all of this, it's an amazing, amazing event for a lot of different reasons. It takes a lot to get there. It takes a lot to stay. It takes a lot for the badges, which are well over face value. They've got this network where you have brokers do it, and Augusta National's committee tries to stay one step ahead of those brokers. And I'm not going to tell you whether I have one of those badges or not. But then you get in, and it's cheap.
Let me go to this one, and I want to dig deep into the brain of the professor on this one, because Australian golf has seen some very big, big spikes over the years, none bigger than when Greg Norman climbed to the top of the world rankings, and that was quite some time ago. But Adam Scott won the Masters just 2 years ago, but his win didn't have near the effect that Greg Norman's win had on Australian golf. Why do you suppose that is? Why hasn't Adam Scott inspired more Aussies to pick up the clubs?
Well, you know, Greg Norman's the inspiration because, as we know, he did not win the Masters, but he certainly inspired a generation of Aussies to try. And so Adam Scott, Jason Day, you know, Jack Newton, who is a Australian hero, and now he's kind of a pundit, talks about this kind of stuff. He says that there are 1.2 million participants who now play in Australia, but 2,000 courses, 15 million member rounds. The Aussie Association tallied last year, largely Greg Norman started it, Adam Scott perpetuated it, and Jason Day is continuing it.
And now I want to get to something that I found a little bit surprising, and maybe you can shed a little bit of light on this, too. Again, Rick Horro is our guest, a sports professor, talks the business of sports with us every week on Speaking of Sports. And Augusta, Georgia is getting their close-up, if you will. Masters Week, they always get the close-up. They always get the attention. But apparently, they're looking to become Hollywood of the South. Really, Augusta, Georgia, the new Hollywood of the South?
Well, Augusta, Georgia is trying. Georgia is doing. Ant-Man, we all watched Ant-Man, $106 million in the state, hired 3,500 Georgians. It was filmed there. Fast and Furious 8, Baywatch filmed there. Georgia is now $5 billion annually, big budget film shoots brought there based on the Southeastern Filmmakers Association. Now Augusta wants its fair share. Get On Up, which was the film that basically celebrates James Brown's life. It's filmed in Georgia, not in Augusta. That's where he's from, though. He's from Augusta. So, you know, obviously this is a big week for that particular city. But it's a big year for Georgia. They've tried to get more money from the entertainment industry, just like New York and just like some other places around the country.
You know, it's not always about being flashy in the sports world, and you talk about how to make a splash, and, you know, you want the attention. Not only do you win, but you've got to make an impression on the fans. Tiger Woods making an impression on the golf world that will not soon be forgotten. As a matter of fact, Nike was a huge beneficiary of Tiger's popularity, and for many years we said that, you know, Tiger moves the needle whenever he shows up at the tournament, and he was, you know, a flashy, charismatic guy. Jordan Spieth is kind of a quiet, keep to himself, go about his business kind of guy. But nonetheless, he has raced right past Tiger Woods in the endorsement dollars, hasn't he?
Well, he certainly has. And what his impact on the brands have, as you might predict, Nike has lagged behind many traditional golf brands, missing their earnings expectations last quarter, as Tiger has missed his expectations of life last quarter. Under Armour sticking closely to apparel, hair-driven strategy, raised its market cap to $17 billion. Under Armour launched its first golf shoe line, a Spieth-branded addition to the blue, black, and gray that he endorses. UA signed him to a reported $20 million deal in January, except it's making more money as he makes more money. He's now AT&T. He's got some other major deals. And, boy, if he wins a second Masters in a row, look for that to skyrocket.
Boy, no kidding. Rick Hora was our guest. We talked the business of sports. I want to bring Vegas into the equation here briefly when we're talking about Augusta, because, as a matter of fact, that's where you're sitting this morning. Not in Las Vegas, but Augusta. And before the tournament started, the favorites to win were number one in the world, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, the defending champion, and then other names, Rory McIlroy, Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler. Obviously, Bubba and Ricky did not get off to the start that they wanted to. They're not in the conversation. And if you're looking for Rory McIlroy, boy, he had kind of a meltdown in the back nine yesterday, too. He's all the way back to plus two. That's still only five shots off the lead. The favorites, I mean, Jordan Spieth, of course, being one of them, he has that one-shot lead, but what about 58-year-old Bernhard Langer? Do you give this former Masters champion a shot at shocking the world?
I hope so. Boy, would that be amazing. How disappointed were we as old guys? You know, I'll admit it, and you won't, that Tom Watson didn't win when he was 59,
right,
a few years ago.
Yep, just 2 years ago.
And so this would be an incredible increase in viewership, a Masters like none other. And how about this? Vegas has Kevin Na at 150-1. Well, he's a marker this morning, okay? So he's I guess theoretically he is he can go out and shoot at like a 42, and he can win, but don't bank on it.
Fantastic stuff as usual. Enjoy the Masters. I'll be waiting for that pimento cheese sandwich in the FedEx envelope overnight.
FedEx, I'm sending in regular mail.
Oh, no. Rick, enjoy the Masters. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks very much. There he goes, the Professor Rick Hora on NBC Sports Radio. Coming up next, Nancy Finley is going to talk about Finley Ball on NBC Sports Radio.
It's Jim Daniels.
Thank you for making us a part of your sports Sunday. We appreciate that. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Got a great mobile app for you. You get that at the Google Play Store. I'm Jim Daniels. This is Speaking of Sports, where we like to kick the box score aside and take a different look at some of the people making news in the sports world. And since spring is here, we are already into another Major League Baseball season, this time with the Kansas City Royals as the defending World Series champions. But before the Royals ruled in KC, it was the Athletics or the A's that roamed those ball fields. It was until Charlie Finley bought the team. Charles Oscar Finley, they nicknamed him Charlie O, a lot of people did. He was sometimes a contentious but colorful owner who challenged baseball tradition by championing changes of his own. Some of his ideas really considered a bit silly, such as orange-colored baseballs. But others, like the designated hitter and night games at the World Series, well, they became fixtures of the game that we're still watching today. Charlie Finley's, Carl Finley's daughter, Nancy, reveals the whole story behind her family's winning legacy, how her father and her uncle, Charlie, developed their scouting strategy, why they employed odd gimmicks like the mustache bonus, and how the success of the 70s Oakland A's changed the game of baseball forever. Nancy Finley, just 2 years old when her father, Carl, joined Charlie as the head of the Oakland Athletics organization. She spent her teen years helping out the team doing anything that she could, and her love of baseball is obviously gigantic. Nancy joins us now to discuss her book, Finley Ball, How Two Baseball Outsiders Turned the Oakland A's into a Dynasty and Changed the Game Forever. We welcome Nancy Finley, the dugout daughter, to NBC Sports Radio. Good morning, Nancy.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Charlie Finley was known as an innovator, a man who wanted to change things up. His promotional ideas were, well, some of them just played wild to go with ingenious, the colorful green and gold uniforms that he came up with. But it was more than that. Sheep grazing in the grassy slopes behind the right field fence, a mechanical rabbit that popped up behind home plate with a supply of new baseballs for the umpire, and the team mascot, a mule, named Charlie O, of course. You were a kid. Did all of this just seem normal to you?
No. Well, yes, but it was like a fantasy land. It was so fun to go to the games, be inside that stadium, and run around playing with my cousins. And we had caged monkeys named after my uncles. We had peacocks roaming the grounds. So imagine all of that. I remember we had a billboard, very, very high tech at the time, with a waterfall, and it was for a beer company. But all of that, and the fireworks after every home run, it was just amazing.
You know, I think that was Olympia beer, if I want to remember correctly. Boy, that's a long time ago. Anyway, Charlie O moved the franchise to Oakland for the 1968 season and built one of the more dominant teams that Major League Baseball has seen in the early 70s for a short period of time, but wow, they were good. They were thickly mustached, heavily sideburned, and they won three straight World Series from 72 to 74. Manager Dick Williams is the guy who finally brought these developing young stars into first place in 1971 and then guided them to two straight World Series triumphs, that's 72 and 73. He deserves the credit, but even he said, quote, "I remember if a player got injured on this team, I needed one. The next day, I'd have two or three to choose from. Charlie Finley wanted to win. Call him crazy, but Charlie O wanted to win more than anything." But he wanted to win it his own way, didn't he, Nancy?
Right, exactly. But remember, he didn't buy the team as an investment. He bought it when he had the money. It was his dream. So, and my dad was his partner, or silent partner, but they were together in this, and they were focusing on the team and having the players lined up in the farm system and always finding talent and having that talent set aside to try it out, see if it worked, and building a family. That's what I call it. And they, I remember when Dick Williams was hired, some people had said, "Oh, why are you bringing him in?" I had heard that he was sort of stagnant where he was, and we brought him in, and look what he did. He shined. It was just finding the right people at the right time and bringing them together and creating our family.
Nancy Finley, the niece of Charlie O. Finley, has written the book, Finley Ball, How Two Baseball Outsiders Turned the Oakland A's into a Dynasty and Changed the Game Forever. Charlie O also had a number of battles with then-Commissioner Bowie Kuhn, who commented on the passing of Charlie O, saying, quote, "I think Charlie will be remembered probably as a maverick. Charlie was Charlie. He didn't like people telling him what to do. He liked to do things his own way," close quote. However, the decision of a federal judge to uphold an arbitration ruling opened the door for free agency in baseball, and the rest, as they say, is history. Nancy, I've got to ask you this question. What is your view of free agency? Did it ruin the game?
I believe the way it was voted ruined the game. Now, we had an alternative. We broached another way to do free agency, and Commissioner Kuhn was against it and told the other owners they should vote against it. Later on, I heard that Mr. Miller, head of the union, said that if they had voted for our suggestion, that would have evened the playing field. no pun intended. What Charlie did was he said, okay, if we're going to have free agency, which the handwriting's on the wall, we might as well do it this way. And instead, the plan B was voted in. That's what I call it. So it was, it seemed to be anything Charlie suggested, Kuhn was against. It looked like it was that way. Charlie often was on the defense with Kuhn. He wasn't going after Kuhn. He was defending himself. So that ended up being something that just kept going on and on. I recently saw a paper retired Justice, Supreme Court Justice Stevens wrote about that case. Right after his retirement in 2010, he wrote an opinion about that case.
You know, those two really had more than a couple of battles. You're right. It's like you talk about Charlie defending himself. Those two were like a couple of heavyweights slugging it out during his time in Oakland. Now, three members of those world championship teams, Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter, and Raleigh Fingers, were all signed by Charlie O. They're all in the Baseball Hall of Fame now. Catfish Hunter said in a statement that Charlie Finley was, quote, the type of owner who knew a lot about baseball and knew how to get great players to win. He was 10 to 20 years ahead of his time, close quote. Do you believe that is accurate, or would you say that looking back now it's more like 40 or 50 years ahead of his time?
Well, it was very far, okay? I'd say 40 or 50. And the thing is, he never played baseball. He didn't come from a baseball family. Neither did my dad. And look what they were able to put together within 10 years. And I believe that is the passion, tenacity, focus, watching. It came from watching and listening. And that is why people would see Charlie call the manager or down in the clubhouse locker room and tell them what they should do next. He was able to see a few minutes ahead. I find myself doing that now when I watch World Series games. I'm thinking, they shouldn't do that. I figured if only I could tell that manager what to do right now. I don't know where that must come from, being around it all the time. But it just shows you don't have to have been a former athlete or grew up or around it in order to succeed at it.
It's a celebration of the game that we love. And Nancy, I've got to ask you, what's the main thing that you want readers to take away from reading your new book, Finley Ball?
The main thing is, I was there. I know what happened, why events happened. And so many books have been written that were not authorized, had no cooperation from immediate family. And my book fills in blanks and goes above and beyond with detailing all the way from 1960 up to the early 80s when Dad stayed with the new owners as a VP and mentor. And I don't have any areas that don't mention years. It just keeps going. And I give the inside scoop on what happened and why certain events happened.
Well, the inside scoop on another beloved part of Major League Baseball. Where's the best place for our listeners to go find the book, Nancy?
Amazon and Barnes & Noble. They can go to my website, which has the Amazon listing at OaklandAthleticsHistory.com.
And some fun stuff on there, too. A ton of pictures. A lot of fun stuff there, too. Might want to go check out the website. Nancy, beautiful story. Thanks for being with us this morning to share it. Again, if you want to get the book, look for it now, or you can Google search it. Finley Ball, How Two Baseball Outsiders Turned the Oakland A's into a Dynasty and Changed the Game Forever. Nancy Finley, thanks for being with us on NBC Sports Radio.
Thank you very much.
OaklandAthleticsHistory.com. Yeah, if you're an A's fan, you want to see some of this cool old Charlie O ball stuff, pop on there. She has many, many pictures on there. You know what? We got one more segment here left of us. Speaking of sports, the program is brought to you this morning by Grainger, serving you with the products you need to help keep your facility running. Call, click, or stop by today. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Coming up next, we'll talk to Pete Fox about, well, the future of maybe a couple of sports. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. That's the way we like a nonstop game, especially on a Sunday. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate that. You have a lot of choices out there. You chose NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. That's cool. Mobile app is yours for your smartphone, for your tablet. It's free. That's cool. Pete Fox in the update studio. He's cool.
Sometimes.
How you doing?
Pretty good, man.
Hey, a couple of things on my mind here this morning. You know, we talked a little bit about last hour about boxing. Apparently, Manny Pacquiao was in a pay-per-view last night that not a whole lot of people knew about. And I think that's largely because the sport of boxing is dying. It's been dying for a long time, and a lot of that has to do with MMA and the way they take care of their business. I mean, they're timely. They're in your face every month. They do a great job of self-promotion, and although I am not what I would call necessarily a fan of the MMA, I tune in for some of the bigger pay-per-views and watch some of the stuff, and although I was very disappointed in the last one that I paid for, which was the Conor McGregor fight where it looked like he just showed up and got paid, got his ass whooped, and then went home.
Yeah.
I guess all of the fighting games are suspect to a little bit of that, what kind of mind frame or whatever the guy shows up in. But I think that what you had in the post-fight last night where they caught the cameras and microphones, caught Manny Pacquiao and Bradley, the guy that he was fighting, talking about making their plans and getting together for breakfast at the Mandalay before they ran off and got on their planes to go their separate ways. You know, I like it better when fighting combatants are angry with one another. They get something to prove against one another. I think one of the biggest problems that has happened with boxing is too many people are getting paid. And I mean getting paid to the tune of millions of dollars for just showing up and losing a fight.
See, I don't have a problem with the fact that they talked about having breakfast afterwards. If the fight was good and that happened.
And it wasn't.
You're right, exactly. If the fight was good and that happened, it wouldn't have mattered. But the fact was the fight wasn't good. And the fact that the MMA is kind of building its legacy on this pregame chatter, and that's what's so exciting for people, just pushes me away even more. I can't stand all the talking. I just want the fighting. If the fighting is good, then the rest of it shouldn't matter. The fact that we're talking about the breakfast plans is because the fight wasn't good. Yeah. If the fight was good, it wouldn't matter. I don't care if they're friends afterwards or not. If they fight well and make it an interesting fight, the fact that they like or dislike each other to me doesn't really matter. But the MMA aspect of the pregame talk back and forth, and that's what everyone loves about Conor McGregor. He knows how to run his mouth. And to me, that is just an absolute waste of time. I don't care how much Conor McGregor's shoes cost. I just don't.
And the fact that they say all these things, I'm going to beat you, and I have all these things to say about your kids and your family and your car and all that kind of other stuff. And then when it's all over, then they're all friendly again. I'm just getting turned off to it more and more every time I watch it. Now, something that Americans are very turned on to, and I think this is maybe one of the only times of the year that they go to their television and look for golf, is when they get to the Masters. What do you suppose it is? I said this earlier on in the program not too long ago that I view this as golf Super Bowl. Now, people will disagree. Some people think the U.S. Open is the greatest. Some people think that the British Open is the greatest because that's where it started. For me and the ratings, it's all about Augusta. It's all about the Masters. What is it about this tournament, do you suppose, that makes it so incredibly popular?
Same course. It's the same course every year, and so many stories have come from this tournament that we know. We know every inch of this golf course because we see it every year just about. Now, we all wish, I think, I know you're a golf fan, so I think we wish that we could see a little bit more of this tournament. We don't get to see enough of it. They try and keep some of it from us, especially in the early days. But Thursday, Friday action.
Right.
They don't play, you know, from the start of the tournament to the end of the tournament.
You're right. As I was looking for more of it.
What's going on?
Because you're right. I am a fan, and I was looking for more of it. I mean, on Wednesday, you got the live from the Masters and the par 3 contest, and that's fun, and the guys out there with their kids and that kind of stuff. But come Thursday, I was looking for more coverage, and the only thing you had is you had to wait until, I think it was 3 o'clock Eastern, before you actually got anything. I think one of the things is the incredible beauty of the place. I think you nailed it by saying it's at the same place, like this, at this Amen corner. Coverage, these three holes in a row where you can, you know, watch in a collage of different screens. So they have added to it over the past couple of years, but still, I think they could give you more coverage. As much as you get, I think there could be more.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's cool about DirecTV, in spite of the argument that they're having with Time Warner Cable about the Dodgers in the LA area. DirecTV does a great job of covering all four majors in both tennis and golf. They have those extra channels that you were talking about, and I think that's all very, very cool. But the thing about the Masters to me is that you could see each year, like, you know, it's the 30th anniversary of Jack's win in 86, and you go back to that, and you have memories of that, and then you can watch the same stuff happen on the same holes today.
Right, right. I think you're right. You really nailed it, that it's the same course, which is different from all the other majors and should be a great one today. Jordan Spieth with just a one-shot lead, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, half a dozen guys going to be chasing him, looking to get into red numbers. Thank you, Pete Fox. Always a pleasure to have you on this program. Appreciate your input every single week. All right, that's going to do it for Speaking of Sports. Stay tuned. Coop is next on many of these NBC Sports radio stations.